Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart. Well, in the West, you can sometimes get the impression that religion is declining around the world. But in fact, it's growing. 8 out of 10 people follow a religion, and this is set to rise. But so too are restrictions on religious freedom and the level of social hostility surrounding religion. Dr. Brian Grimm is a world expert on international religious demography. He's the president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, and he was recently in Australia speaking at Notre Dame University's School of Law on the social and economic impact of religious freedom. We got a chance to sit down with him, and I began by asking Brian why religious restriction is growing around the world and what form that restriction usually takes.
Well, you're right. Religion is not only a prevalent factor. More than 8 in 10 people have a faith, and even among the people that don't, most of them have some religious belief or engage in some religious practice. So faith is prevalent, and it's growing because on average, people who have a faith are younger than those who don't. So it's a growing phenomenon, and it's a moving phenomenon. So people are moving with their faiths around the world through immigration. So in this growth of religion, we're seeing rising tide of restrictions on religion, some of it related to the movement, some of it related to secularization, a variety of factors. So we see restrictions coming from governments, but really the big thing is social hostilities involving religion, which restricts religious freedom.
Yes, well, let's talk about that. Your research has shown that freedom of religion, when it's protected by governments, you say, and respected by its citizens, results not only in less conflict, but a whole lot of benefits. You talk about social and economic benefits. Let's separate those for a moment. What are the possible economic benefits of religious freedom?
Well, I mean, at the very fundamental level, since most people are religious, if or have some faith affiliation, if you're restricting their freedom on perhaps which is a very fundamental identity to many people around the world, that inhibits their creativity, that inhibits their desire to be a member of society. Maybe just an example. I worked in two countries where in one country my faith was illegal. Completely illegal, Saudi Arabia. The country right beside it, United Arab Emirates, it was legal and even encouraged. In one, I lost all motivation for work. In the other, I wanted to contribute to society. So, where faith is restricted for people, that makes them, start to question, does this society even want me? Do they value me?
And okay, so there's a sort of an economic, there's a motivation to be involved and engaged.
That's right.
And are there things about those government restrictions that take place sometimes that are actual kind of practical impositions to people of faith?
Yeah, so, governments can restrict religion in many ways, and all governments do. So, and some restrictions are good to provide a fair playing field, to keep it so that, sort of a religious dominance that squelches all freedom and thought, that most people around the world consider that to be useful. Not all do, but, many do. So restrictions in and of themselves aren't necessarily bad, but when governments start to pile up restrictions, that's when we start seeing the negative outcomes in both, economics and in really peace in society.
What about social benefits? You argue that it's especially good for women when we have less restrictions.
Well, that's that's ironic because when people think of religious freedom, that means letting religions do whatever they want. Isn't that what religious freedom is? But really, religious freedom is the guarding of everybody's ability to practice their faith or have no faith at all. Or change their faith. So in that, when you protect that right, that means that there's not just one religious group or one religious leader that's calling all the shots for society. So in that, then women have greater freedom, as do all people. And if there's a faith group that they find is squelching their freedom, so to speak, they have the freedom to move. And where that freedom to make a free choice about religion is restricted, that's where we see more restrictions and less possibilities for women.
Yeah, it is ironic, isn't it? Because many people in the West would think the opposite to be the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, they think that rights are in conflict with one another. But in the, you mentioned some of the research I've done. And when looking at how religious freedom is correlated with other things, such as free speech, civil rights, political rights, those are strong correlations, the top three. Number four is empowerment of women. So where you have religious freedom and, you know, sort of a rich pluralism of ideas and that faith is part of the, you know, natural dialogue of society and not necessarily imposed and not removed, so it's that balance, then you find better lives for everyone.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. We're talking to Dr. Brian Grimm, an expert in international religious demography, about religious restrictions.
Now, Brian, we hear today that Christians are among the most persecuted religious group in the world. That might surprise a lot of people. What are the most serious examples of this?
Well, if I can, at the beginning, it's important to describe what persecution means. And I'm a social scientist, so I find that term difficult to measure, because persecution to someone might mean, well, someone offended me in my beliefs, or it could mean they've been put to death. You know, so there's such a wide range. So the way that I've approached it is whether or not there's been a physical abuse towards somebody, or including hate, you know, hate offense, including hate speech. So I call that harassment rather than persecution, because persecution is a very broad concept. So in the measures that I've done, indeed, you're right, Christians face harassment from governments and groups in society in the largest number of countries around the world. And, you know, that's on the one hand very surprising to some, concerning, but it shouldn't be so surprising, because Christianity is the largest faith group in the world. So, you know, just statistically speaking, that shouldn't be surprising to people. I think it is because people don't imagine that happens anymore. And so it does happen. Of course, Muslims are the second most harassed group, and that's surprising to many people, because Muslims themselves face tremendous pressures, sometimes from their co-religionists, such as in northern Iraq, the ISIS group coming in. Their primary target are other Muslims.
And what's your sense of the sort of antidote to some of this pattern around the world, whether it's Christians or Muslims or others, that are experiencing this sort of harassment?
Yeah, well, I mean, the simple answer is people need to love each other. You know, love thy neighbor as thyself. And, you know, that's sort of, it sounds trivial, but it's really not.
Talk about than do, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I work in, you know, United Nations circles, World Economic Forum. I work, you know, with governments around the world. And, you know, just mentioning that we have to have compassion for others. I mean, we all often don't use the word love, but, you know, interfaith understanding. Religious freedom is how I usually term it, but that's much more than tolerance. So oftentimes in religious freedom discussions say, well, we need to increase tolerance or have tolerance for other faiths. But what that does is it means, well, you know, I'm the one who can decide what I'll tolerate and not tolerate.
I'll just put up with.
And then
that's
when
much more passive, isn't it, than an active seeking the good of someone?
Yeah, seeking the good in them, but also good for others. Yeah.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. We're talking to Dr. Brian Grimm about religious restrictions.
Now, you spend a lot of time looking at this sort of the research into this area. You do a lot of speaking around the world and so on. Are you kind of optimistic about how we can move forward in productive ways with worldviews that are often very much different and in conflict?
I hate to say very optimistic, but I am optimistic. Mm. And part of the reason is because I can see how the world's power is now, you know, it's not vested in governments, it's most of it is in businesses, in the economic system. And for the economic system to function well, it needs peace, and it needs people who are willing to work together. So if business which has a stake in this game as much as anyone, can see this and start promoting interfaith understanding within the workplace, acceptance of, you know, of an employee's faith orientation rather than, you know, trying to make them keep it in the closet. You know, that's only positive for society. It's when you try to restrict, you know, people's, you know, sensitive and reasonable expression, that then that's what creates extremism. So my concern would be the same in Western society as it would be in non-Western societies, that it's that freedom to be who we are in the public space that diffuses the tensions that can be very both political and turn violent.
Well, I think this is a really interesting angle because I don't often hear the way business might be a key player in this movement towards more peaceful coexistence, and it makes a lot of sense.
Well, can I give an example?
Sure.
So this can happen at small companies as well as major corporations. So I'll give a small company that a major corporation recognized. In Israel, where there's, you know, an ongoing situation of tension, and you know, there's people that get along between Jews, Christians, Muslims, but there's still a lot of tension. Well, there are two guys that grew up, a Jew and a Muslim, who met one day, and they started a friendship, and they found they got along, and then they said, well, we should do something together. And so they started a business, a tour business, where they took Muslims to Jewish families for tourism and vice versa, Jews to Muslim families. And they found everybody liked it and they made money. And so this business that they did called Meji Tours was recognized by the BMW Group in an annual award they give for intercultural understanding, including interfaith understanding. So BMW itself has 130 different countries, nationalities working in their plant in Munich. They work all around the world, and they know from their own experience that they have to work with people's faith and backgrounds. And so to help others see that, they're giving awards out every year to young entrepreneurial companies like the Meji Tours that are also getting it, that, you know, religious freedom, interfaith understanding is good for business.
This is the way forward.
Right.
Now, you've lived in, it's a fascinating sort of story you have of your life of having lived in America, Soviet Union, former China as well. In those places, what was your sense of the impact of restrictions? It's not only religious restrictions, but restrictions on the population in terms of the culture and people's lives.
Well, I think that I really found that the challenges from society are much harder to navigate. So religion, and when you have a lack of religious freedom and among people in society, when they have prejudices against their neighbor, they hate their neighbor, and religion becomes that part of that hatred, that's tougher to deal with than a communist structure that has some organization and leadership. You can engage in those structures. So how will these rising social hostilities, ranging from religion-related terror to radicalization of, you know, people at home and abroad, religion-related conflicts, you know, how do we solve those things? And that's where I come back to the business angle, that when you involve business where you have the, you know, it's the crossroads of creativity, commerce, and culture, they have solutions. And can I give one example from Australia?
Mm-hmm.
So I just met with the CEO of Sanitarium today. You know, this is a company that's owned by a church, and, you know, they're making products for health and well-being. And part of their products, or their philosophy, is that, you know, your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and therefore you need to feed it right. And it's not just a theory. You know, they put this into practice in their food company, but then they're sponsoring clinics around, you know, the South Pacific, and they also have a project where they're looking at how to combat diabetes through diet and exercise, especially in places where they can't afford the medicines. So from this business, you see an engagement with society, and they're doing this from a position of faith. And that's the kind of innovation that comes when you set people faith free to let the best of what's in their religion contribute to society.
Thanks for being with us. We look forward to seeing you next time on Life and Faith.